Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Michael Gurian, author of Leadership and the Sexes. Hi, I'm Nathan Ives, and I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Michael Gurian, author of Leadership and the Sexes. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag posts found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, we interview Michael Gurian, author of Leadership and the Sexes and co-founder of the Gurian Institute, a training organization focused on helping corporations, educators, parents, and communities understand how the male and female brain operate differently. And so now, without any further delay, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by New York Times best-selling author Michael Gurian. Michael is author of over 21 books, and most recently, Leadership and the Sexes. He is co-founder of the Gurian Institute, a training organization focused on helping corporations, educators, parents, and communities understand how the male and female brain operate differently. Michael has spearheaded a national effort to provide communities and corporations with training in brain-based gender issues. His pioneering theory has been featured in leading national media, including the New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, Time, Newsweek, and now the Strategy Driven Podcast. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, I am thrilled to have you on the show. I thoroughly enjoyed Leadership and the Sexes and certainly believe it has quite a lot to offer our listeners. So I'm really happy that you're with us and just want to dive right in. So just to get us started out and grounded, I was wondering if you could explain for our audience what is meant by gender intelligence.
Yeah, what I mean there is folks at sort of two levels. One level is we get to understand each other, male and female, in pretty deep ways based on using science. As you know, Leadership and Sexes has some spec scans in it that mm-hmm. actually show how different the two brains are, and then there's a whole bunch of research and work in it showing how this affects everything we do, the way we talk to each other, the way we do conflict, communicate, even run meetings differently. So learning all of that is one half of gender intelligence, and then the second half is then making the changes, the adaptations, as individuals and as teams, leadership teams, systems, the whole corporate system, even marketing and selling teams, making the adaptations that create more effectiveness based on the understanding and the use of the tools.
Okay, so really it's rooted in science? And
yeah, my work is all science-based in all the different fields I work in. My gender, I'm always looking at starting with science. So it's nurture and nature. So I start with what does science tell us about nature, and then, of course, how nurture affects nature.
Okay. I personally appreciate science because, well, my undergraduate degree is in physics, and I'm a nuclear engineer by training. So.
Oh, wow, that's great.
I'm all about the science part. Michael, in Leadership and the Sexes, you describe how men and women have equal but different intelligence, and you describe it as being six different dimensions that mark that difference in intelligence between men and women. I was wondering if you could walk us through and describe those six different dimensions.
So, yeah, for instance, how we remember is different. And I'm going to give tip of the iceberg, of course, here. We remember details in different parts of our brain, men and women do. And so people may have noticed that, I'll give a little anecdotal fun thing. You know, if folks are at home and I, Mike, the guy, comes home and says, "Hey, I saw Joe at the grocery store." You know, my wife, who is Gail, may say, "Oh, great, what did Joe say?" And, you know, and then I may go blank. Oh, well, I don't know. We talked about the kids. The kids are fine. Well, men don't remember as many of those details, the sensorial details. We don't take in as much through our senses as women do. We don't store as much in our memory. And so then, you know, when we're verbalizing, we can't get at what we remember. And so one of the second things is how we process words. Well, women do process more words through their brains than men do. And these are all averages. There are exceptions to everything, but in general. And when we test all over the world, when we look at the number of words that women use when we put together reading, writing, and speaking, so all those things that use words, women outpace men. How we experience the world is another way. Men come at the world and women come at the world somewhat differently, and I'll give a biochemical example. Men have more testosterone, which is an aggression chemical, and women have more oxytocin, which is a bonding chemical. So when we come at the world, even the least aggressive man has more testosterone than the most aggressive woman. So, you know, things like this can affect, of course our upbringing affects us, but these things like this can affect us. And as people are trying to climb corporations, they often find that there are more really aggressive guys doing that in their style. And women have to get more gender intelligence and, okay, how do I do that without losing myself? Because I, as a woman, want to experience the world my way, you know?
Yes.
And then what we buy and why we buy it. I mean, just going right down to that, a fun example I love to give in trainings is to watch, for people to go into stores and watch men and women and how they act in the store. Women will, for instance, like to touch clothing more and match colors and lift the blouse off and, you know, look it out on their friend. Does that match that color? Well, female brain's taking in more sensorial data, so she's getting, she has more nerve fibers in her fingers, so she's having a more sensorial experience. You see the guys, you know, they're kind of sitting in a chair a lot of the time waiting for their spouse, or they're, you know, over in at electronics. Men tend to hunt when they buy. They walk in, I'm hunting something, I need a new tool, I go to the wrenches, I get the wrench, or I need a DVD player, I go get the DVD player. I don't linger for an hour. So the way, and also a fifth thing is the way that our emotional processing works. Women process through their brains, and there's a part of the brain that's more active in women called the cingulate gyrus. It can be up to four times more active. It processes and pays attention to emotions. And so women are paying more attention to more people's emotions at a given time and processing more of that. That is a great thing in the workplace, for instance, if you're going into a negotiation. We really want some really smart women in there in the negotiation because they'll pick up more facial cues. They'll pick up more emotive cues from the people we're negotiating with. So, and then another one is the amounts of white matter and gray matter. If people have wondered why men seem to be so task-focused when they get on a task and they just stay with that and it's harder to interrupt them, they get a little irritated, whereas women tend to multitask more. Well, men have more gray matter, and that localizes brain activity in specific parts of the brain. Women have more white matter. White matter coats the brain and moves the signal to all sorts of different parts of the brain, so she connects a lot more dots. So those are six, and of course, as you can imagine, it's tip of the iceberg.
Oh, yeah, and just, I mean, those differences, I can imagine that they really do influence and shape and create a difference then between the way men and women lead in an organization.
Well, absolutely. When we understand these things, you know, really at deep levels, and the teams get together and they get it, and it takes a while, you know, and it's really fun, actually, to get into the science of it. And then they get to a place where, as a leadership team, they start respecting each other's leadership styles even more. And I'll give you some examples. For instance, when men lead, men tend to lead more deductively. Okay. When women lead, they tend to lead more inductively. What I mean is men will tend to say, okay, so here's the data, here's the conclusion, this is what I want to go figure out. So they deduce it and they move forward. women will tend to want to take in more material. Well, I want to hear more from you. I want to hear more from you. What are you thinking? I'd like to study this a little more. I'd like to have this group study this a little more. And then, you know, and gathering all of this wonderful data, connecting all these dots, and then saying, all right, here's what, you know, I think we ought to do. What do you all think? So this is a different leadership style, and there are going to be some situations where that very deductive, very fast, you know, sometimes crisis-oriented male style is going to, you know, work better, sure. And there are going to be times when this more inductive, let's get more people involved, let's hear more facts and more, you know, more of the human story to understand how to sell this product that women do, there are going to be times when that is even better, you know. So both women and men have their own leadership style, and what women have had to do is to change. I mean, we sort of have disadvantages on both sides. Women have had to try to change their own leadership style and make it more male.
Yes.
And that has really caused a lot of issues, because at this point a lot of women are saying, okay, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to be myself and be a part of this corporation. So that's an area of real distress in corporations, where we're not understanding the female style. On the male side, quite often men are feeling very bashed for their style. So, you know, it's the male bashing, and, you know, you guys are pigs, and you know, you're too aggressive. And so both sides are not really understanding each other, and they're doing things that are not as functional for themselves or their team as could be.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to, in the next question, and I hope I'm not reaching too much, but I wanted to ask something about what I see as our changing work environment. And I see this with a lot of the clients I work with, or the company I work for, is our workforce is evolving. We have a lot of our baby boomers are now retiring. We have an influx of our younger Gen Y group coming in. And this is a very collegial group, speaking in a broad sense, that really appreciates that leadership style that brings them in and questions and draws out of them, you know, their thoughts, their feelings, and their ideas. Do you see women maybe having a more dominant role going forward because of their leadership style?
Well, definitely. I mean, I'm very optimistic about gender intelligence and gender leadership. I'm really optimistic. I really see that most of the men in corporations that I and my team work with are actually really know that female talent is valuable, and they want to know more about it. And it has started with the baby boomers especially, and now it's moving into the next generation, as you say, where even if it's a younger man, like a 25 or 30 year old, has gained a bunch of power, he's thinking, yeah, but how do I bring female talent in? And simultaneously, women are bringing their talent in and saying, you know, here, check me out. You know, I'm pretty smart.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that in this generation. So I'm very optimistic. At the same time, I'm realistic. And the corporate world, I mean, if we move out of the small business framework and move to the larger corporations, I mean, small businesses can be very inductive and sort of collegial. And, I mean, you can do all sorts of experimental things in small businesses.
Yes.
And kind of wing it, you know. But in the big corporations are so hierarchical, and they have to, because they have to organize so much human energy, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 employees. It's in those corporations, what we are finding is that the 25-year-old woman comes in, she's of this generation now, young, vibrant, comes in, college was great for her, it was awesome in college. Then she gets an MBA, she was awesome at her MBA. Then she goes into the workplace, she gets about $50,000 or $100,000 is spent in the first 1 to 2 years training her to be really great at her job. Let's say her job is in financial services.
Okay.
To be really great at that. That money is spent. But over a 2 to 3 year period, the young guys in that workplace are not understanding her leadership style. These are young guys around the same age, aggressive guys,
sure,
who, let's say, are selling investments, or, you know, they're in financial services as well. And somehow her equality that she achieved in college, and those skills she got in college that helped her to succeed, mm-hmm, and her generational skills, once she hits that very hierarchical workplace, she starts having trouble. And there's a, like a transition difficulty that a lot of our young women are having, and it's a systemic difficulty in the corporations, which they come to realize when they say, oh, wow, we've spent this $100,000 on these young women, and 3 years later, they take that $100,000 away. In other words, they leave this corporation. We trained them, but they left our corporation searching for another corporation that will understand them at 26 or 27 better. So I'm optimistic, but I still see that the, especially the larger corporations have to and want to deal with the presenting issues of women entering these workplaces that in which the male and the female leadership styles are really not understood. So the gender differences occur, the misunderstandings occur, and women leave.
Okay. Okay. Michael, keeping on the same theme of the rapidly changing business environment, and technology is certainly driving a lot of that change, how do men and women compare in their ability to adapt to change?
Well, each have adaptive skills. You know, I would never say that either is superior. Like we always say, you know, men and women are equally intelligent. They just do it in different ways.
Okay.
I can look at a couple areas of adaptation that are difficulties for each gender. For males, we are seeing some adaptation difficulties in the generation we're discussing now, the younger generation. We're seeing that we're losing a bunch of the young guys. They're failing to launch. They're not developing the kind of work ethic we would like. And this is starting in high school. Some of them are checking out of school even in middle school. You know, they just feel like school is not for them. They're not getting a good education. Then they can't transition. Many of them don't go to college, so it's very difficult for them to enter this high-power, you know, high-tech environment. And so they don't launch. So for males, one of our worries for the younger males is, why are so many of them not launching? And even at 30, you know, they're hardly gainfully employed. Simultaneously, a lot of these guys who don't want to go to college but want to work really hard, a lot of their jobs are gone. Their jobs have been shipped overseas. So we've got those issues on the male side. On the female side, and so those are two areas where we're really trying to help males adapt. We're trying to retool those guys, since the jobs are gone overseas, retool them, and we're trying to do a lot of work in the schools to help these younger guys not drop out. Now, for women, areas of difficulty in adaptation, one area that occurs is in that first 5 years of employment, where they enter a system that's for which they're very assiduous, diligent, college skills are not as good a fit. They really have to try to develop somewhat more assertiveness. They have to look more carefully at promoting themselves. You know, they can't be as conciliatory. They can't always say, oh, sorry, okay, you're right. You know, they have to say, this is my idea. So that's an area of adaptation difficulty for a lot of those young women, especially if they're shyer young women entering into that workplace.
Okay. Okay. Now, Michael, I was wondering, because a lot of what we're talking about seems to me to be disenfranchisement, which you know, I often equate with then lower productivity or, as you've mentioned, attrition, where people actually leave the workplace. In your studies, have you been able to quantify a relationship between gender and the gender intelligence or the level of gender intelligence of an organization and the bottom line results that they're able to achieve?
Yeah, we can give right now. I can give three examples where we've actually got quantitative data. So we feature these. Number one, I'll give the example of Deloitte & Touche, which is a major financial services accounting company.
I'm very familiar with them.
Oh, you're familiar with them? Okay.
That's because I'm a Deloitte.
Did you work there?
Manager. Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay.
I'm a Deloitte manager, and I think Deloitte's a wonderful company.
That's great. What era were you there in? Because they did a whole big gender program sort of 2000, 2001 to 2005. Were you there in that era?
I first joined Deloitte at the very end of 2005, and I'm still there today.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. Well, then you will know that that they did this basically a major initiative to look at the issue of the female talent that was leaving.
Yes.
And they made a whole bunch of changes, created mentoring programs, did a lot of brain-based training, a lot of training in gender differences to teach the young guys, teach the women. So that's one that we feature in Chapter 8 of the book, because they gave quantitative data. They felt they were saving about $190 million a year because they retained the talent, which is a significant amount of money, you know.
Oh,
another example we give is IBM, which did a whole diversity project. So they're on the tech company side, and they did that over a period of years. And, you know, they certain quantitative things, for instance, they were able to go from 10 million to 100 million in one of their divisions, you know, one of their marketing small business divisions, because they did both gender diversity and they did ethnic and racial diversity. Mm-hmm. So they're an example. And then a third one quantitatively is the Catalyst Corporation. Catalyst it looks at data from companies, and specifically what they found was that the companies and firms that had more women at the top earned more money. And that was very interesting. And, you know, what we feel is going on there is that if we can help more women get there to the top, those women have a certain insight. That talent has a certain insight that the guys at the top don't have. The guys are really smart, but if you have, you know, 50 guys and one woman, they're going to miss some stuff about who they're selling to or who they're giving their services to, which is a lot of it's women. So the theory is that by having more women at the top, those women have insight in not only how to work internally with all the female talent internally, but also the consumer. So those are three ways in which we know now we can quantify that when you increase gender intelligence, you increase your bottom line.
Okay. And I haven't actually, I don't think before in the Strategy Driven podcast, mentioned that I'm a manager with Deloitte & Touche.
That's great. We've made that public.
Yes, we made it public. And I am absolutely in love with Deloitte Consulting. Just a phenomenal organization to work in. We are consistently ranked as the best place to launch a career. But all those programs that you talked about, Deloitte spearheading in the early 2000 timeframe, you know, I view myself as just being a benefactor of just the great results that have come out of that. Just a company with a wonderful culture, and
great.
I'm thrilled.
That matters.
Yeah. And it's in part because of the work environment at Deloitte. It's you know, compared to some I've experienced elsewhere. You know, I really am convinced that respect for diversity. And when we talk about, you know, gender intelligence, I consider that a part of diversity and inclusion.
Oh, yeah.
Really goes a long way to make a company more effective, more efficient, and more profitable.
Absolutely. We think we've proven that, yeah.
Yeah. So, Michael, what and we could use Deloitte as an example or IBM. What are some steps that you would recommend executives and managers take if they want to improve their gender dynamics within their organization?
Well, I think now with leadership and the sexes being out and, you know, really having put together all of this, I think one step that's just an action step is that book set up for leadership teams. So you know, 10, 20, whoever, however many are in the leadership team, to do a book study of that. And it's set up with situational exercises, you know, one meeting per week. Let's say you have a staff meeting. So that's a way to immerse and inculcate the understanding of gender differences and have dialogue about it. Number two, I think it's really important for corporations, if they decide, you know, they want to do this, they need to get training, coaching. Gender's a big deal. You know, it's a lot of it's formatted into our brains, and so this is something that's been building in our chromosomes and in our brains for a million years of brain development. So training and coaching is important. Generally, the programming that happens from that, generally those programs will require the development of a mentoring system. It's very hard for either women or men to move up, especially in a major corporation, if there isn't a strong mentoring system in place. And
yes.
Mentoring is a somewhat subtle art. And it can be taught, and of course there's instinct to it too. I mean, instinctually we know how to do it. But if we don't know how to do it, you know, we really need help. Corporations need help setting up those mentoring systems. And then, you know, basic communication tools between the genders become crucial. And that requires practice and, you know, kind of some study. And what we do, I mean, you can tell from the book, our work is to sort of weave this in. So you take on one thing at a time. Like, for instance, all right, this week, let's look at meetings. How are we doing meetings?
Okay.
Let's just focus on that. And so if a man is leading the meeting and there are 10 people in the meeting, so what is happening in our meeting of 10 people? Are there two women that we never hear from?
Okay.
You know, and if so, how are we going to lose that talent in a year? Because they're going to burn out on not being heard from. Or are there men not being heard from? You know, I mean, it's the whole way of just kind of putting a microscope to the various areas in which we as two genders interact. So meetings are one of them. Negotiations is another tool we have. Focus this week on negotiation.
Okay.
So when we negotiate, are we utilizing both male and female talent in negotiation? So one thing at a time over a period of months, and then this stuff gets inculcated, and then some pretty deep changes get made.
Okay. Okay. Now, and I think of this just from past experience in another organization where I was the chairperson for the Diversity Council. When we started to try to go down that road, we wanted to assess where our organization stood relative to our diversity and inclusion practices and our culture. I was wondering if you could give us some insight as to how a manager or an executive would go about assessing his or her organization for their level of gender intelligence. And I was also hoping that you could give us some insights as maybe to how to do it quantitatively as well as qualitatively. And it's just because I, given my physics background, I always believe that as long as you do the interpretation right, the numbers don't lie, and they can help you get to that that conclusion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it should always be both, really, and that's what. So the Goering Institute Corporate Division, for instance, when we go into corporations, when they invite us in, we like to look at both. We ask them if they're willing. I mean, this would be after, of course, we've signed a confidentiality agreement. We ask them, look, if you're willing, show us what figures you folks in HR have got on the loss of talent. You know, do you see in specific areas that you're losing, and quite often it's female talent, you know, that jumps out depending on the corporation. So if it's a tech corporation and sort of a whole bunch of female engineers came in, but then 5 years later, the corporation is noticing that most of them have gone. So, you know, that's quantitative information that we need to factor in. And then, and in financial services, can be really in anything. Then qualitatively, it's really important that surveys are sent around, cultural diagnostics are done to get feedback from everyone involved. And so corporations have to decide, like when we help them, we say, okay, do you want the whole corporation? Do you just want the senior leaders? Do you want the line managers? Who do we want to hear from to find out, you know, in an anonymous survey, what is going on? And I think, you know, corporations can do that internally. There's no doubt, and many of them do. Sometimes, though, if it's internal, you know, folks will not respond with as much honesty because they're afraid of consequences, which is normal and natural. So sometimes they might respond better to, you know, someone from the outside, where it's an, you know, where they're sending an email not into their HR director, but to someone else who's collecting it and then saying, okay, here's what we've learned. Here's our report. We've learned that blank. And one of the things we often will find is that, for instance, men are more likely to say everything's going fine.
Okay.
You know, more women are more likely to say things are not going fine, and specifically, here are the things that are not going fine. I don't feel valued. You know, and I don't believe the women around me do. And then surprises will come up, though. Some interesting surprises, like quite often, more than I think folks realize, younger women will say, I would rather have a male boss than a female boss.
Oh.
Okay, well, that'll be a surprise. You know, wow. Because, you know, you would think that. And so, no, that doesn't happen all the time. But that's one of those little nuggets of surprise that you'll get when you're seeking out the qualitative side, and that's why it's important to not just look quantitatively, though you have to and it's crucial, but also do the qualitative, because these surprises will come through. And then folks will say, oh, well, when we look at gender intelligence, we need to help, you know, we can't assume that it's men against women or women against men. We've got to look at issues that are happening intragender between women, older women and younger women, generationally, okay. And older men and younger men.
Okay, okay. Michael, before we close, and maybe a little bit of a plug for your book, too. In the book, you provided a reference to an online resource, which is an assessment that an individual can take that helps them to, I guess, identify their degree of maleness or femaleness of their brain. And I'll admit, I took the exam myself, and the score was interesting. Could you tell us about the assessment and kind of what it tells people that take it?
Yeah, there are two. We give people two things they can do, and what they're doing is they're looking at where they fit on the gender brain spectrum. Okay. And what we mean by that is the, you know, there are over 6 billion people on this earth, and
yes.
Let's say around 3 billion males and 3 billion females. So there are 3 billion ways to be male and 3 billion ways to be female. So we don't want a stereotype at all. There's a spectrum that involves the 6 billion people. Okay, so at the same time, if you have a XY, it means mm-hmm. you're male, there are markers on your Y chromosome that affect you so that when you are born, no matter where you are in the world, you will lean more toward the male side of the spectrum. And female, if you're XX, your brain will lean more toward the female side. So of course, we can give folks all sorts of facts about that, like you and I have what it might look like. But if they can take some surveys and tests, they can get even more insight. And so one is I've developed a survey that is in the appendix. So it's appendix one of the book, and people can just fill that out. You know, it's questions, and then you add up your score, and you get a little sense. And then there's the reference to the brain sex one, which is an online test. And the brain sex one it will help folks in a different way. Mine is more psychosocial, and the brain sex one is more, are you more spatial mechanical, or are you more verbal emotive?
Okay.
And so, like, when you took it, one of the things you took was, how spatial are you, right?
That's right.
To try to sort of figure out, so where are you on the brain spectrum? Because the further out male you are on the brain spectrum, one of the characteristics you may well have is that you tend to operate more spatially and less verbally. And so that sort of test can test some of those things. So people do have two resources beyond the book itself that they can use.
Okay. Excellent, excellent. And while we're talking about resources, I did want to mention your website, which is at www.GurianInstitute, and that's all one word, .com. And I will put a link on the website, on the Strategy Driven website, with the posting that will be the podcast.
Okay, and that website is the general Gurian Institute site.
Okay.
So that includes all of our work, because we're gender experts in all the areas. So we work with corporations, with schools, with government agencies. So if you go to GurianInstitute.com, that will take you to education, all that stuff. And then what you want to do is click, if you're in the corporate world, click corporate division. And that's going to take you then to the subsite, genderleadership.com, which is all about the corporate.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Michael, I want to thank you for your time and for sharing your insights on how organizations can improve their performance through the use of gender dynamics and improving their gender intelligence. I've really enjoyed your book, and I'm hoping our readers will go out and pick up a copy so that they can benefit from it as I have. So,
well, thank you, Nathan.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Michael Gurian for being with us today and sharing his insights on gender dynamics. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Michael Gurian and Leadership and the Sexes at www.GurianInstitute.com. So until next time, so long.